Podcast. This is Co-opticast, episode number 103 for Monday, March 11th, 2013. We've got the full crew. What is the threes?
He's counting like a German.
103? 103? Whatever. Whatever, Canadian fellow.
Oh, we're going to start there.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we're not counting like the French.
You brought the Germans into this. The Germans.
One,
so,
two,
we surrender!
He's not French-Canadian,
dude. Yeah.
Jeez.
All right, so Locke, let's start with you in the What You've Been Playing segment.
What have I been
since
playing?
Since you've been talking about... What you've been playing besides Fix the USB Port.
Between battling my computer. Yeah, it's great. It's a turn-based adventure. Tomb Raider. With that hair tech, the first, I guess second, sort of game that I've been using on my beefy new PC, and it's really good. I've been digging it. I haven't played a Tomb Raider in a while. Again, kind of feels weird playing Devil May Cry and Tomb Raider in this year. But yeah, I like what they've done with it. I like the action. Again, you kind of have to separate yourself from... sort of the story versus being a cold-hearted murderer.
she has never killed anyone before.
Right.
But I'm about 8 hours into it, and I think I've killed about 500 dudes at this point.
She hates tombs too.
But
she does.
But yeah,
that moment is very funny.
There's lots of extras and collectibles and that sort of thing, and really digging it. And I'm trying to go through doing it sort of like just super silent, super stealthy. No guns, that sort of idea. Because I think, I don't know, just...
Guns are for cheaters?
How far are you, Locke?
I'm about 3 hours in, so not too far, but I mean...
I tried that too, and there's a moment when you're just gonna... You'll probably do what I did and say, nah.
Yeah, I'm just gonna snap and just be like, all right, double. Yeah, just like... Two-handed.
It's about the moment when you get a grenade launcher that you'd stop really using that bow.
Okay, that sounds about right. But I mean, yeah, it's a cool game. I haven't played any of the multiplayer or anything like that. I mean, it's a cool reimagining of the series. It's really, you know, taking it to the next level, and I'm excited to see sort of this. This type of game sort of explored more because, you know, Uncharted was good. It was fun. It was a spectacle. Tomb Raider is, it's like Uncharted. It's a, you know, it's taking it a step further with a couple extra elements and I guess you could call it side quests, but yeah, it's great.
I think Tomb Raider is more fun to play than Uncharted.
I think
Uncharted does the spectacle and the story better.
Totally,
so
totally. And
just,
I guess I prefer,
just merge them.
I prefer
let's
the
get a
former.
Lara Croft, Nathan Drake crossover.
Ooh,
let's do it.
That'd be pretty
that
cool.
That would be a neat co-op experience. Think
with
about
Batman
it.
Batman
think about
in just
it.
For the hell of it, right?
There it is.
Yeah, Jason,
I think that makes sense. I've been playing it too, and I think it's really interesting that there is some downright disturbing stuff in that game.
Yeah,
like you've seen some of it, Locke, but there's some stuff later that I want to talk to you about.
Yeah, I just...
See
and
my
psychologist.
After class, Locke. You,
and I mean... I really like stuff like when she got hurt, or you guys remember in Metal Gear Solid 3 where you had to like reset your bones and stuff?
Yeah.
I really like that sort of thing, and I know it's unrealistic to have it in a game where you're like in the middle of a battle and you're like, crap, I have to heal. But I think that's just a video game trope, but I really like that survival stuff, and I hope there's more of it. I don't know, but I mean... It'd be cool to have, I don't know, a stitching mini game, but maybe not. I know that. No, I seriously.
The game
I'm
breaks
not,
to turn into trauma center where you suddenly have to perform surgery on yourself.
I know that doesn't sell copies of games, and people like the common person doesn't like that. But I'm like, I love that sort of survival stuff.
Locke, I'll just say if you liked the thing you just said.
Yes.
There's payoff for it
wonderful,
later.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And you're gonna really like what happens.
Okay, good.
I think.
I'm color me excited.
Yes.
And other than that, we've been sort of popping in and out sporadically with Sniper Elite Nazi Zombie Army. We had some connection issues with Jason, but I managed to play through with some randoms. I know everyone, I guess, at this table has been playing with lots of different people, and that game is pretty fun. I know we mentioned it a little bit, but again, Mike, balance issues plague that game for sure.
Yeah, they're awful.
It's got this Left 4 Dead vibe going, but being sort of a budget title expansion sort of thing, it doesn't have that extra sort of elbow grease or that extra thing that makes you just want to play all the time. It actually made me want to go play more Left 4 Dead, but, you know, sniping is really satisfying, and again, slow motion to the dome, you cannot beat that. really, it's awesome. So, really, again, that's about it for me. I'm working my way through some 3DS stuff. I was talking with some buddies about Monster Hunter and what's going on with that, because I really want to get in with that, and I'm hoping that there's some sort of patch. They've been super vague about the patch on the 3DS, because I don't want to buy a Wii U to play Monster Hunter, basically. So,
yeah,
but I do want to play with other people. So.
Well, I will. All right, I will have it.
Jason, why don't you talk about some sniper, since you didn't agree for that?
So, first impression of the game was, surprisingly, the sniper mechanic works from Sniper Elite V2. Like, I went in the game expecting not at all for that to be the case, because you think zombies, you think, okay, they're all going to come at me, and the weakest part of Sniper Elite V2 was the whole machine gun up combo. They're like, you know, that's not what that game was meant for. So the sniping works to a certain degree, because eventually you're going to face a horde of zombies and you have no choice but to pull out the machine gun or pistol and start shooting them in the head as best as you can. And as you were saying, Locke, it's, you know, makes you feel very much like Left 4 Dead. I mean, like, you can't help but feel that. Just particularly as you start playing through it, then you end up with those little moments that, you know, Left 4 Dead was built upon, all the little stories you can tell. Some of the balancing issues, though, that you guys brought up, and feel free to add on for your own, but it really has to deal with the fact that it goes from 0 to 120, which is great in short bursts. It's great, like, you know, when it happens once and all of a sudden you're facing off against all these zombies and you got to figure out a way to get through them. When it's every pretty much predictable 5 beats... then you're just kind of like, okay, well, this has now become a routine, and how many more of these do I have to go through before it's the end of the level? And great, I died on this one, now I have to go back here and go through this, you know, the other one again before getting to the next checkpoint. And just, they needed to have cut it down. Like, I think they could have gotten away with it a whole lot better if they just shortened those levels, made it like half, or, you know, and split some of them, because Nick and I went up against a boss in one of them, and I think, you know, shorter time getting up to the boss, that would have been a perfectly fine level. Very first level that you go into, if that level was half, perfect. I played another level with a group, with a random guy, probably one of my better matches that I've been in, because he and I just, for, you know, whatever reason, you get into those grooves with it where you just both like hitting things, you know, one after the other.
Yeah, there's definitely a rhythm to it,
and it's one of the more fun levels I've played in there, actually. It's I don't think I don't know what that is. Anyways, so I don't know. It's the zombies coming for us. You get into a certain pattern with it where the level itself is you go around and you're actually collecting keys to get into this door, and there's all this really creepy stuff happening, and it is different from anything else or any of the other levels that you kind of appreciate it a whole lot more. And I feel like that's really what they should have been more focused on is, okay, have one level where it's these hordes of zombies, the next level it's this slow build up to a boss, the next level where it's you're hunting these things down. So there's just enough difference that you feel like, you know, you want to keep going with it, as opposed to let me sit down for an hour.
I think part of it, it's not necessarily balancing so much as pacing overall.
Yeah.
And if you can snipe really well earlier on, it's a lot more satisfying. And I think the level you play, Jason, where it kind of eases you into the sniping a little bit more, might have been better off early on. And then the, you know, the bigger open levels where you kind of have to pick defensive positions and hold off things a little bit more would have served better later on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, the levels are just way too long, and which wouldn't be a big deal if you could actually checkpoint and quit in co-op. But
you
can't.
Yeah.
You're in it. I mean, and like, so you start, and that's it. You're either going to make it all the way through, or you just say, I'm done with this.
And that totally happened to me. Like, I went to a boss fight, and there was three of us, and this was with some randoms, and boss fight was near impossible with three of us, and it was in the cathedral. I don't know if you remember that, Jason, but I had to quit. Like, we tried the boss, like, 10 times, and I couldn't do anything about it, so.
Yeah. I mean, Nick and I got to that same guy, and just the two of us, I mean, if you said it was impossible with three of you, I mean, with two, it's like, there's just way
we had them
much.
Close, but it was, there was just too much to deal with, so.
And I watched a video, I watched a solo video of some guy doing that. He spent 20 minutes, 20 straight minutes on that boss, and that's just wrong.
Yeah,
like,
that's
that's it stops being fun when all you're doing is running around because you got a bunch of zombies or skeletons, whatever, chasing after you. You take care of them. You take maybe one shot at the boss, and then you start running around again and again and again. It's just like that's not for a fun encounter.
It's like it should. My idea is like if you are all like if there's four of you on your game sniping, you should have no problem clearing the level. Like because you don't nobody snipes perfect. Like there's you'll get like you know if you're doing okay, get like one out of five.
No, we lost Locke.
Ah, okay. Well,
there he is.
I was talking about how bad of a sniper I am.
You are.
you know, did any of you guys ever play Hidden and Dangerous on the PC back in the day?
Yes.
Yeah. No.
For me, like, that had some of the best sniping, like, in any game ever. And I really think, like, this kind of follows up the feel and, like, the satisfaction of the shots. Like, you used to be able to snipe the guys in their throats and you'd see them, like, gasping at it with the... Like, I don't know. That's been something that's been missing.
So, Nick, did you like Soldier of Fortune a whole lot?
I mean that was too much gibbing though. Remember they used to snipe them there, just would like explode into
giblets
and everything.
But
Hidden and Dangerous was just it's a lot more tactical and I don't know, this kind
of and V2 had a lot of those elements. I mean that was just it, right?
Yeah.
So V2 had those elements of you had to get to the vantage point, you had to get there somewhat quietly, right, in order to avoid just getting shot out by guys, particularly like once you hit the harder difficulty levels and you had bullet drop and wind and all this other kind of stuff, like that made shooting so satisfying. Like when you lined up that shot and you got it and you had the slow-mo cam, like you felt so good, like you just nailed that shot because you know you account for everything.
I've got it on 360 and I played like one level and that was it. I should really try and give it another shot.
Go back and like crank up, I mean
of course using the gamepad freaking sucks.
Yeah, like have to do mouse.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know. Anyways, so aside from that, been playing a whole lot of Etrian Odyssey 4 and on the 3DS.
Yeah, tell me about that. I know it's not co-op, but like...
You're a rune master.
I know. I played Etrian Odyssey 2, and I fell asleep. So sell me on the latest hotness of dungeon mapping. What have they changed?
If you fell asleep, then there's probably not much in this for you for at least... For the first part of it, like, I mean, the thing is, what I like about it is they've broadened up the whole world, right? So you went through Etrian Odyssey 2, it was just like floor after floor after floor after floor after floor, and you just map it. Okay. They've opened it up now where you have an airship, and so you can kind of go around this land, find different caves, and, like, the main maze for that area, which has, you know, like, three levels to it or however many... But so you get a little bit of diversity there, right? It's like you're not stuck in the same place for five levels. It, you know, the trappings are a little bit different, but, you know, it helps break up some of the monotony of it. The thing is, though, you're still going in there. You're still doing a lot of the mapping. I mean, none of that has really changed. It's not until the later game, which I've only seen hints of. I haven't quite gotten there yet. But the biggest thing that they've changed is they've, you know, the character classes are different from 2. They've got a few new ones. They've opened up this idea that you can actually select a subclass, which is the part that I'm waiting to get into and see how that mechanic works, because that's something new from Etrian Odyssey 2. In the end, though, you have to really like that sort of grind of dungeon and everything. And you have to kind of prepare yourself, too, that the party that you go into this with, you kind of have to be ready to retire them and start all over again with a whole new set of characters, because to, like, really get your party all the way up to the highest tier, you pretty much have to take one party all the way through, retire them so that the new set of recruits that you build based off of those get more skill points, more ability points from the very beginning.
Interesting.
And they become even more powerful. So, I mean, if you have that in mind, then you're just like, okay, you know, this is what I'm in for.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I mean, like, I have fun with it. It's a great way. The fact that it's portable means I can pick it up. I can go through, fight a few monsters, do whatever I need to do, put it down, you know, go do the next thing, pick it back up again right where I left off.
I can sell it to you.
Because I understand it's a niche title, and I mean, it just...
So the two things that stand out to me that Jason actually didn't touch on is that, you know, he talks about Etrian Odyssey being a grind, and it is. You've always had to kind of make sure that you're of the appropriate level in order to take on a zone, but what the side dungeons do is they give you something else to do that you have your grinding experience, but you're doing it in a new place with different enemies and different mechanics, and each dungeon has its own little rules that it plays by.
Right.
Like, one of the early ones, there's, you know, the foes, like the big monsters that chase you around and basically wipe your party until you're powerful. There's one where there's baby ones, and there's a bunch of them in it, and you can kill the baby ones easily and get a lot of good experience, but if you kill all of the baby ones, the mother of them appears and starts chasing you through the level. So that's a little different, and... there's always been quests in the game, but they've really fleshed out the quest system. There's always, like, four or five different things to do, and they don't all involve going to the same place. They'll involve going to a side dungeon or going to a specific area of one dungeon at a certain time of day, or going throughout the world, and when you're in the airship, you can, like, farm, like, for, you know, you can fish, hunt, and gather, essentially.
But here's where I'm going to interject. Fish, hunt, and gather just means you stand over a certain spot and press A. And this is why I glanced over this, is because if you're not sold on the mapping stuff, the fact that you have side dungeons, they're a great addition if you're into the game already. If you're not into the game, you're just like, I'm going somewhere else to go draw a map on my bottom screen.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, that's... You gotta play by the rules the game gives you, Jason.
Yeah, no, hey, but it's, hey, you know, I'm it's sold a, on it. You don't have to, you know, tell me.
It's solid. It's I've played three of them at this point. I played the first one a little bit, and I played two, and I didn't play three, and this one just feels like a big leap forward. The other big thing they did is they added casual mode. So if you, because one of the biggest frustrations in Etrian Odyssey is always like, I mean, I'm being chased by a foe, and I get hit by a random battle, and two turns into the random battle, the foe joins the battle and wipes you, and then you game over, sent back to whatever your last save was, and you have to do all that again. If you turn casual mode on, they give you... I'm not playing in casual mode, but...
Right.
I guess you always have the Ariadne thread. Like, you always have one to escape the dungeon, so you can jump out at any time. And when you die, you keep all of your progress. You just get dumped back to town, so you don't lose anything other than, you know, having to trudge back to where you were. And there's the autopilot and stuff. You can set like a path through the map, and you land on it, and it'll just take you through a set course. It's pretty cool. Plus, the Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack is awesome.
Is there room for like some sort of asynchronous co-op thing going on in something like that, like Dragon's Dogma, where you use a pawn, or
either you could certainly argue that something like that would be awesome in it, but there's nothing like that. The Street Pass stuff is just seeing other players, like what their party makeup is, and I guess you can recruit members out of their party.
Oh,
but
well, that's kind of neat.
Those party members don't actually gain experience.
Oh, weird.
So, but you can get, like, you find someone who's, like, level 50 or whatever, high level. You can bring them into your game, and you can run around and use their character, but their character doesn't grow in your game.
Gotcha.
So actually, that's exactly like Dragon's Dogma.
I was about to say.
Who would have known? Yeah.
Cool. But, I mean, you know, the only way I can really sell you on this game is that if you haven't been impressed with any of the ones so far, Mike's right. This is the best one so far that I've played out of the whole series. Like, it just feels better. And little things that they've done, like the way that they animate the enemies, the soundtrack, the slight improvements that they made in terms of let's not just stick you in a dungeon forever. You can actually go out and explore the world a little bit. Helps break up some of that same, you know, just like, okay, now I'm in B3F, now I'm in B5F, and, you know, that sort of feeling to it.
Sweet.
All right, Mike, tell us about Dark Souls again.
Oh, what are you doing, Nick?
Tales from the Bonfire.
He's stoking Tales it. Okay, bonfire. Stoke it up. Tales from the Bonfire. Here we go.
I have almost beat the game. I'm rolling through the DLC.
Okay, that's
right
Dark
now.
Souls.
Hey. No, I'm rolling through the DLC right now. I just beat Knight Artorias. Did it solo, actually, so I was pretty well done, pleased well with done. That. That guy's a beast. I'm also wearing his armor now because I'm a jerk.
Yeah, how is it that you look like V for Vendetta?
That is Marvelous Chester. He's an NPC in the DLC, and you can kill him and take his outfit. So I did.
Very well done.
He's a vendor, but he doesn't sell anything useful. But he looks awesome. So
he must
I killed
die.
Him. I killed him and took him stuff. That's just how you roll in Dark Souls.
That's how you play by the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played a bit with Andrew. We took on Bed of Chaos, and I was able to do it on my own. And Andrew had a little bit of trouble with his character. He was unable to get some of the jumps. He was not very
because he's naked.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He's having a little trouble there, but we're all synced up. We're doing the DLC. And I had some really great PvP. I had an invader. He and I we went at it for about 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was a real grind, let me tell you. No, he was a sorcerer, and he was spec to he was like agility and sorcery. It was really difficult. Like, he was really adept at parrying, so I had to be really careful around him. And we were fighting near the Lost Izalith entrance in the staircases there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was up and down the vines, up and down the staircases. He's trying to find enemies to bring in aggro me, and it was good. But nice. I killed him.
Nicely done.
He brought me down to a bare sliver of life, and I backstabbed him, like, right at the end. It was pretty awesome. But yeah, so other than Dark Souls, I've been playing Tomb Raider. I'm probably about three quarters of the way through that one. Lara is a complete murder machine. It's the same thing with Nathan Drake. You're being sold that this character is like an everyman, or, you know, someone thrust into something beyond their ability, and they just man up and Hulk up and do it.
And yet they have the ability to, you know, fight like a Navy SEAL and catch grenades in midair and throw them back at their foes.
Like, the amount of times something falls apart and Laura, like, drops 300 feet and somehow survives is pretty staggering. But I got to a point in the game where there's just some really, really disturbing shit in there. It was pretty awesome. It was, if you've ever seen The Descent...
awesome.
I can't say too much to, you know, for fear of spoiling, but it's pretty awesome.
Sweet.
And
cool.
Yeah, been digging that. I'm probably going to check the multiplayer out just to see. Interesting thing, there's like all of the achievements in the game are not tied towards the story progression. You get an achievement for beating the game, and the rest of them are all like, have you collected X number of the items? Have you shot an enemy with this particular weapon X number of times? It's all kind of like, I wouldn't say emergent stuff because it's stuff you're doing anyway, but it's trying to coach you to play in certain ways and be a little more creative to get the achievements. So that's interesting. And I have also been playing Etrian Odyssey 4, not nearly as far as Jason. I've probably put about 5 hours in it, and I have not beaten the first set of dungeons.
All right. Cool.
And Fire Emblem, because it's awesome.
I just downloaded that. I haven't touched it at all, but just downloaded it.
It's great. Cool. That's it. Let's move on.
Yeah, so I'm still playing some Fire Emblem when I can. NHL 13. You guys kind of had to watch the end of my game before this. The online team plays.
It's wonderful.
Still has its hooks in me. Sniper Elite and SimCity has been the bulk of my time, which we'll talk about a bit later.
Yeah.
But we'll move on at this point. And jump right into SimCity news because...
That time is now.
It's Let's go!
Well, we're going to talk about all the bad things, then we'll talk about
the good stuff.
Impressions of it, so to speak. But yeah, so SimCity hasn't had a very good launch.
No.
The rumors, the fears, they've all come true. The online, always online, requirement for the game came back to bite EA in the ass, and nobody could connect to the game at launch. They only had, like, for North America, they only had, like, 4 servers, I think, on launch day. So I guess they grossly underestimated how many people would be playing this game.
Just a bit.
Yeah. So, when you could get in, even, after the first day, I couldn't get in the first day, really. It was always, it would either queue you up or... And it wasn't a queue to get in. It was a queue to wait to try again to get in. So you might wait 20 minutes.
So your name wasn't even on the list. You were sitting outside waiting to get on the list and waiting to see if the person ahead of you...
Yeah, am I on that list yet? Oh, no, I'm not on the list. All right.
This guy's on the list. He's got 3 girls with him. Get him in here.
Yeah, exactly. So even after they kind of fixed that part of it, getting in, a lot of the co-op stuff didn't end up working. A lot of the region-based multiplayer stuff, messaging didn't work, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, things spiraled out of control. They started disabling things in the game, actually. They disabled the cheetah speed, which is the top speed you can run the simulation at. They disabled, like, achievements and leaderboards and all this other kind of stuff to try and get it up and running.
Cheetah speed is the same as llama speed.
Yeah. It's like, no, it's not.
Those llamas, they've been working out, man.
So... Long story short, EA has been very apologetic, and I kind of liked the note from their studio head of Maxis, and she said, "We did a lot of dumb things." Yes, you did.
Oh.
And to kind of make restitution for that, they're going to give everybody that bought the game another free game via Origin. So hopefully it's anything from EA's catalog. That was what the wording was originally.
What are you going to get?
A game from EA. Crisis 3.
Oh, what other games from EA's catalog requires always on DRM? Maybe that's what they'll make free.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, we'll talk more about the whole always on DRM thing and that later, but yeah, they screwed up big time. And actually, I wrote my review. I went to go capture some video tonight of it because I wanted to put some nice video in. And... couldn't connect to servers.
Really?
Well, so wow. Couldn't even get some video I wanted for my review, so I don't think it's going to be in there now.
Now, Nick.
Anyway.
I was just going to say, Nick, like, you've kind of had, like, you've had some trouble, but you've also been able to play, like, personally.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, where are you at personally, like, right now? Like, is it more of an inconvenience, or you're like, crap, I really want to play this game, this is bullshit, like... I'm just curious.
I guess like Thursday or Friday when there was having the issues with, like I had my city to like a pretty good place and I was doing some stuff. And when the region stuff wasn't working, like it said it was working. Mm-hmm. Like you could see, you'd be like, oh yeah, I'm going to buy power from this person. And you'd buy it. But then the little thing would say getting 0 megawatts
it
from blah, blah,
powering,
blah. Even though you needed it. So, that was when I was frustrated, because I was at the point with my city where I needed to use the region to advance what I wanted to do, and that wasn't working.
Right.
So,
huh.
I mean, all the other times, I couldn't get in, yeah, whatever. I sat here and I played Fire Emblem while I waited. That's what I was basically doing. But,
so a minor inconvenience.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was... I don't know.
I was just curious, so...
I think at this point, though, a week later, after adding all those servers and stuff, like... the fact that I couldn't get on night. Now we're getting to the point that, yeah, it's kind of unacceptable. Yeah. 3 or 4 days after launch, it's an online game. Like, none of those games ever, you know, any MMO ever. Even things like Battlefield 3, right? When that launched on, remember? They had big problems with that. Their servers were having problems. Xbox was having problems with that. Like, It happens. I get that, but
it's just weird.
A week later, you should be able to have your ducks in a row.
That's too bad.
I can only think.
We'll come back to that.
I can only think of a handful of games that had a smooth launch.
Yeah, or, I mean, it's. I think for every game that had a smooth launch, you've got one that's had, one or two that's had a rocky.
Yeah.
Thing. I was actually, somebody was asking today on Twitter for it. I was like, oh, let me think. I was going back in time what recent ones were. And the last one I can think of, like a big game that was MMO-wise, was Guild Wars 2, maybe?
Guild Wars 2 had a good launch, though.
Yeah, it was really good.
No, it didn't.
Are you sure?
I looked it up, and I found that there's all these ArenaNet apologies. They turned off sales of the game because they couldn't handle the load. I had no idea because I didn't have any problems.
I didn't either.
Apparently, there were problems.
Weird.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, well, maybe that didn't have that. I mean, it wasn't as widespread, apparently, because, like I said, all of us had played it, and we didn't have issues. But, yeah, they had disabled sales of the game for, like, a week or something like that. And
I just remember them turning the sales off because they're, like, all the people downloading it were causing issues with the login server or something.
Yeah.
But, like, if you already had the game installed, there was no issue. So I don't remember. It was fine to me. I had the weak head start or whatever for pre-ordering it. So
yeah. So I wanted to talk Dragon Commander, which is a Divinity.
Yeah, game. I'm curious about this, dude.
DJ went and got some hands-on time with that, and it looks really slick. Like, it's kind of a hybrid title between like a kind of RPG and RTS, and even like a first or third person action game. Because what it is kind of building up your kind of your army thing, you know, recruiting guys and gaining experience and items and stuff like that. And then I guess you have, if it's a special unit or if it's a unit that turns into it, but you have dragons, right? And the dragons can be controlled by another player or yourself. And in that mode, it's like a third-person action game, and you can actually fly around and do kind of real-time combat and stuff like that. So he came away really impressed with it. He said it wasn't really on anybody's radar, but
no, that
sounds like it should.
Dragons with jetpacks. I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
I've been looking for another Panzer Dragon.
You know, once in a
while.
There's
even like a card collecting mechanic in the game and stuff.
Hold the
too.
Presses.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, it looks pretty slick. So yeah, it's going to have 2-player online co-op through a campaign there. Plus, it'll have like comp stomp matches you can play that way. But yeah, it's looking pretty slick, and it's set in the Divinity, I guess, universe. Apparently there's this whole big story of how they make it fit. I don't really follow it.
I played Divine Divinity in, like, 2002 or whenever that came out, and that's the only one I've played.
Yeah, I don't know. There's an interesting article about how they say, basically, they justify something that never happened. I guess there was, like, a futuristic one of this or something, or a more futuristic one. I don't know. I can't predict.
Second one, Eco Draconis or whatever it was kind of a departure in a lot of ways from what they had set up initially, I think.
Okay.
And so I think that's probably the one.
Okay. So anyway, it's looking good. So it should be on everyone's radar. It's coming out later this year for PC.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome that DJ got
something
to
different.
Test
something
it
different,
out.
At least. It sounds very different. So
totally.
It's good. We need those unique things. Hey guys, guess what? God of War is out tomorrow. Are you excited? Are you pumped?
See, excitement.
It has come.
I didn't need it. I played God of War 3, and I think I've had enough God of War.
Well, you know what? The reviews for this one weren't very positive. They weren't bad, but they weren't. Woohoo!
Yeah, they weren't high on it.
But yeah, finally, after all these rumors, I think we had rumors for so long that God of War was getting co-op.
Right.
This does have co-op, but it's one gameplay mode. It's a survival mode for 2 players.
That's a weird number, because
that's about it.
There's a bunch more in, there's like up to 8 in the multiplayer?
I think it's 4-on-4 or 6-on-6.
I think it's 4-on-4.
I played the beta for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was all
That's all you needed. I don't know, man. Like, those games are good for their audience. And God of War 1, amazing game, did some great stuff for that genre. God of War 3, holy crap, that looked great, and some cool set pieces, but, I mean, you got, when you're playing a beat-em-up, you can't rely on, a character like Kratos. Like, I don't know, I know all of us are kind of past the, like, I'm so broed out and beefy and awesome. And I'm going to hop in my bro Millennium Bro Falcon and that sort of crap. But like...
Bro Baka!
But I mean, but honestly though, when you come go against, like, Revengeance, like, you can't compete with that when you have a lot of other great hack and slash titles to... And Devil May Cry, like...
And Revengeance is kind of crazy because it takes the bro paradigm and just kind of shifts it because... Raiden seems so trying hard to be a bro that he's totally. Like way on the other side of the scale.
And I mean,
no, no, no. He's Jack the Ripper. Jack the Ripper.
And right. He talks he's all not the a time bro like this.
But I mean, God of War, series is like that first one. They were always pushing, you know, the envelope, and it just seems to me that they're kind of running out of steam, and there's like, well, let's just put another one of these out. There's some cool things, like, you know, I have some inside baseball on that project, and there's some really cool stuff that they could have done with, like, the different gods. Like, all the marketing material behind it is all surrounds, like, Hades, Poseidon, Ares, and Zeus, and, like, just integrating those so you maybe choose a god and play through the campaign that way. Like, they could have done some cool stuff, that's what I'm trying to say, but I don't think they did, so...
Yeah, they don't want
to
take any risks.
No, you can't. You don't want to when you put that much money into a game, so.
Speaking of risks, it was a risk to include Dead Space or co-op in Dead Space 3, and that's just what they did. And the game's getting DLC.
Deal with it.
Deal with it, yeah.
Whoa.
Shades on Isaac Clarke.
It's coming out tomorrow, actually. It's called Dead Space 3 Awakened. And I actually got to play a bit of it a couple weeks ago now at this point. Okay. And it's different. It's kind of disturbing.
Back to being creepy.
It's got a lot more. I wouldn't say creepy so much as like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is creepy.
Right.
Like, so basically, Unitologists are still being Unitologists, and they've taken over one of the ships. And so you get back to the ship, and you face off against them, except these Unitologists have a problem, and they're converting themselves to basically be like the enemies in the game. And so they're, like, chopping off their own limbs and stuff. Like, literally, like, you're forced at one part to watch them saw their arm off.
Wonderful.
Which is pretty gruesome.
Playing on that moment in Dead Space Extraction.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so, you know, it's more ship hallway kind of stuff, a little bit slower pace, and Isaac this time is the one that's kind of seeing some crazy visions and stuff. What's kind of interesting about it is the one battle I played, I won't say it's like a boss character, but it's kind of like a special character, and it looks like he's almost like warping around the room, and so you're hitting him, but you're not sure if you're really hitting him because he's warping around. And apparently I didn't get to play it in co-op, but apparently John's not seeing this guy there. So Isaac's like shooting at nothing apparently. And then, you know,
that's awesome.
John's like, dude, what's going on? What's the problem?
See, that's a cool co-op innovation where you're like turning the game or turning the experience on its head. Like,
yeah, no, it's cool. So, and
everything is kind of, there's Lynch. New,
yeah, there's new
everything.
It takes it to a different level though.
Yeah,
than the Kanan Lynch thing. But yeah, so there's new chips for weapon upgrades, a few new weapon parts. The guy said the campaign, the story should be a couple of hours. So yeah, it's $10 out tomorrow. Should be pretty decent.
Nice,
hopefully. Yeah, and what else we got? A little Minecraft news. Apparently the exclusivity deal with Xbox, Microsoft, is ending, and there's a good chance that we could be seeing the game on PlayStation, whether it's PlayStation 3 or PlayStation 4 or both.
Built in on the PlayStation 4.
That would be really smart. So. I won't lie. Get rid of home and have Minecraft built into
Minecraft
it.
Minecraft instead. There you go. That would be brilliant.
No, you're not playing. It's not going to be Home on the PS4. It's going to be The Witness.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was going to be The Broom. Sorry.
So that's about it I have for news. I don't know if there's anything you guys might have seen popped up the past couple weeks. Might have missed.
I don't think so. Just the SimCity stuff. I think it's hilarious.
So let's go back and talk about SimCity stuff.
What's the latest? What's the review clocking in at these days?
Let me talk about the game itself and how it actually works, and kind of some of my disappointments and some of the high marks it's got. In terms of, if you think of it up by itself, if you're not looking for just another SimCity game, it does what it sets out to do. Like, you cannot play the game like you play the original SimCity. Like, you just keep building and building and building and then, you know, kind of going for millions of people in your city, right? Like, some of the biggest cities in our region right now cap out at maybe 250,000, 300,000 people. And they're all skyscrapers. I mean, you're seeing nothing but skyscrapers and people in there. And yeah, so the regions that you have to work with, or the city's plots that you have to work with, are a lot smaller. And while you start out initially, like, building everything, you need power, you need water, you know, blah, blah, blah. Eventually you get to this point where you're like, okay, I've maxed out my lot. Now, what can I get rid of and get from the region? You know, what do I do well that I can specialize in and give back to the region? And then what can I get rid of to build up my population some more?
Right.
So it's what becomes interesting is, like, the lots that you build on definitely have plus and minus. Like, the one of my biggest city right now is built on an oil deposit, so I'm focusing on oil stuff and sending that stuff out to the region, anybody that needs that, and whatever else is involved. So if there's people that have power plants that, you know, they get oil power, they kind of get the benefit of that and stuff like that. But it's interesting because it goes down to the level of, like, police and fire and ambulances. And those things, those are resources that will literally leave your city and go to other cities and help them out if they don't have enough. So it's good to have, like, if I want to make a city that's got 10 fire stations in it for whatever reason, maybe someone else only has to have one little rink-a-dink fire station and my city is able to take care of theirs.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting in that sense. But the biggest thing, and this kind of relates to the always-on DRM thing and the way it works, is you can't really experiment like you used to be able to do. You can't really say, all right, I'm going to try and do this, and if I screw up, I'll just reload. I'm going to fire off this disaster because it'll be fun. Then I'll just reload. Because your city is saved instantly. So you can't, like, have that kind of fun. And, like, if you ruin all your stuff and everyone's depending on you, you're kind of screwing everyone else, right?
Yeah, like, if you are the cool city, you're the cool man, and you get nuked, you're like, have fun with solar power, suckas.
Yeah, thanks, Obama. You know, this was something Mike and I were talking about over IM. Like, what happens if someone just, like, doesn't go back to their city? Well, basically, your city stays in whatever state you left it at. So whatever you're pushing out and pulling in, that stays. So, like, you're... it doesn't constantly run in the background. It won't grow on its own and stuff like that. You can't leave and come back and see it changed. But so you can't be griefed in that way. But you can grief other people in the region, which, you know, if you're playing with a bunch of friends, it's not likely to happen. But so anyway, I mean, long story. The amazing part about the game, the truly amazing thing, is, like, if you just sit back and you watch this thing in action, like, every little thing, it clicked with me today. It's Roller Coaster Tycoon on a massive level, right? I mean, every person has something to do, has somewhere to go, has a happiness level. The happier they are, the more money you're going to get in because they're going to go do things and stuff like that. And then you get up to, you can even watch cars drive around. You get see a guy get in a car, drive to his job, leave the job later, come home. Like, it's really incredible that they, you know, simulate 200,000 of those things going on, right? You know, just little things that happen, like kids playing on a playground. Like, at night, you'll see a baseball game going on, and, like, they'll be playing baseball in that baseball stadium. You know, there's just a lot of little attention to detail. There's a fire. You'll see the fire trucks roll up. The guys get out, pull out the hoses, hose it down. There'll be shootouts at banks when there's a bank robbery, and the cops will pull up. They'll arrest the guys, take them, you know, put them in the car. You can watch them take them to jail and stuff. Like, it's just a crazy attention to detail. And, like, you can get lost just in that kind of stuff. But I guess the sacrifice of that is, you know, you can't do that on a much larger scale, at least not right now. That's one of the excuses we get for the smaller plots of land and the region thing. And the region thing is the whole reason that the game has this online DRM / requirement. So
now, here, when do they take that step and go the Dust 514 route of the people building SimCity are playing, but then the people playing the Sims are acting within that city?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could. It could probably happen. It'd be interesting.
Because do they have meteor there. Strikes in the Sims? I've never played the Sims since like the first one, so.
The disasters are pretty cool now, and when you play like a real game, like there's a sandbox mode where it basically turns off disasters, or the real mode where they're just random. I've had a meteor strike hit my city, which was pretty impressive, and that did some damage. I had an earthquake. I had almost a zombie outbreak. 4 people apparently got their brains eaten, but my police force managed to subdue it before it actually
happened.
Just
like the movies?
So there's kind of... So there's actually kind of like these little like TV pop-ups, and it's like news at 11, zombie outbreak. So yeah, so you kind of get like little updates like that and stuff. So
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, but again, like part of the fun of SimCity was always like, yeah, I built up this big thing. Now let's see what happens if I unleash, you know, a tornado through it. And you can still do that if you want, but then you can't reload.
Right.
Right. Then you're going to have to work on cleaning up after the mess. The other big thing they added, I forgot to touch on, is there's a constant like challenge system going on. Like people will pop up and they'll be like, "Hey, I want to have a fireworks display tonight. I'll give you 50,000 simoleons if you let me do this."
Simoleons.
It might cause a fire. It might not. And then it says, "Do you want to do this? Warning: This mission will cause a fire." Right. And so yeah, you could do it. And then there's a bunch of fires you guys can put out and you get some money. There's other things like. Shipping a certain amount of product to the region or
product.
Yeah. Well, it could be, there's certain freights. There's like TVs, stuff like that. Barrels of oil,
bath salts for
things
the zombies.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of those things that constantly pop up, and by doing those, you get extra money and stuff and they kind of help out, but they also give you smaller goals to work towards. You know, you always have kind of like a big goal, like, hey, I know I want to try and build this building, which costs $200,000 or whatever. But in the meantime, you can work on some other stuff.
Right.
It's like I said, it's really impressive what they've done, and they've really changed the dynamic. Like, there's a lot of working on the buildings themselves. You upgrade the buildings. You can add things to it, like a police station. You can add prison cells or more cop cars.
Right.
You know, mass transit system, a bus station, you can add more buses, you can add bus stops. Like, there's a whole bunch of, you know, there's layers upon layers upon layers. But at the end of the day, you're still kind of, you get to a point and you're like, I thought you stop, but that's when your past mistakes really come to haunt you.
Right.
So it's like, if you don't know well ahead of time what you want to do, they can come to bite you later, because there's no more light residential, you know, heavy industry. It starts all the same, and whatever the roads are govern what can grow there. Mm-hmm. So you can upgrade roads later, but like the size of, say, a skyscraper might be bigger than the grid you laid out for the townhouses, right?
So you have to go back. Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's different.
Interesting. I'm still keen to try it. I've got a bunch of other stuff right now, and
we need to make
well, I mean,
we need to make co-op.
It's not working still.
Yeah.
It's, but so I mean, what do you guys think about the online, always online requirement in terms of?
I mean,
we're seeing more and more things.
I think it's almost inevitable that games will go this way just because of the piracy.
Yeah.
There's
the piracy and the necessity of an ecosystem for microtransactions. Like everything that you, like almost everything that has a lot of microtransactions has like a sandbox system to play it in, and it, you know, the PC is not currently like something like the iOS App Store, where all of the purchases go through one location and it's relatively well safeguarded. And the PC, you know, what's your option that everyone can use? PayPal? Well, you know, PayPal gets hacked all the time, so a lot of these companies make their own little sandbox. And I don't care so much about the always on, because I can count the number of times that my computer has had no internet in on one hand for the past couple of years.
And it's the worst thing ever.
Like requiring an internet connection, it's the people are like, well, what if I don't have an internet connection? They're like disaster preppers. Like, I have the bomb shelter in my basement just in case China, you know, decides to invade.
Yeah.
And one thing I need to do once that happens is play Diablo 3.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's, like all DRM, it's inherently anti-consumer,
Yeah.
Being able, like, in a game like SimCity, where you're, like, it's forced multiplayer. You have to play into something. Like, you don't make one city. You go into a region. Yeah. You can set the region to be private, but you're playing...
Yeah.
You're still playing multiplayer. You can invite your friends, or you can play all of the cities in your region yourself, I guess. But that doesn't seem like the way to do it. Most people are just going to be playing with random people online, I would think. But something like Diablo was, I think, a little more egregious, because the only reason they did it...
What do you think about cats?
The only reason they did it in Diablo is because they wanted that real money auction house. Everything else didn't require it. It's a game that most, the numbers showed that despite it having four player co-op, most people played it single player. So a lot of the people saying, I have to connect online to play my single player game, can I give you an FU? I mean, that is things like that suck, but having to have a legitimate account with a CD key or a game code attached to it to prove that you own the game and have access to it is basically where I see games going to prevent prevent piracy and the whole used game thing.
Mogwai perfectly reflects my opinion of Mike's thoughts
but sticking his butt in my face.
I think, though, like, you nailed it when you said, like, the people that complain the loudest about this are the people that, like, their internet, if they were away from it for more than 5 minutes, it's the end of the world. So the fact that there's the off chance that they wouldn't have access to the internet.
Well, I think it's less that they don't have internet access and more that they have to depend on the reliability of EA's or Blizzard's or whoever or Ubisoft's server. And right now they're winning that argument because I mean, look at SimCity. It's a fucking disaster. I mean, this is one of the biggest fumblings of a launch I have ever seen.
Yeah, and the bigger issue too, and this is the thing that kind of, it's a new concept. Andrew put an interesting comment in my review about it, but servers going away and that aspect of the game going away. And he brought up his examples of our hit, like Halo recently, and Army of Two. And if you think about it, like, official servers have always gone away, but then they've become community run. And you look at something like this, and I don't even know if that's going to be possible. So what happens? Like, you can't even play single player once they shut it off, right? Like, correct. You're done.
Yeah, that's all multiplayer
stuff.
You don't
have access to... Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't access Halo's multiplayer or RBA2's multiplayer, but you can still play the game. Like, this, it would be like an MMO shutting down. Like, you're done.
Yeah, and with something like Halo, you can always system link it or play on a LAN.
Right, exactly.
Get multiplayer back.
Okay, fair enough. But so the honest question, though, is raise your hand if you're going to go back and you're going to play Army of Two, or if you had to add that online DRM, if you're going to go back and play Army of Two or the original Halo that hasn't, you know, they've re-released Halo at this point. They've, you know, brought that back up again. So basically what's been built into these things is a certain shelf life for the game. Like, at some point they said, you know, no one's going to be playing this, or there's not enough critical mass for us to maintain our requirements for the game. And really, is it realistic for people to be picking that up at some point down the line?
There's an easy argument for the point you're about to make. Good old games.
Yeah.
Look how well that's doing. And if we get to the point where the games we're playing today would end up on good old games, you won't be able to play them multiplayer.
Or
and
at all.
And look at something like System... Okay,
unless
right,
they transfer rights
all.
Over to
like,
good old games.
Right, System Shock 2 just got re-released. And you can play that multiplayer in co-op again, right? And that's huge. That, and, you know, it's a 15-year-old game at this point. 12-year-old game. I don't even...
13.
Thank you, Mike. But,
almost 14, but, yeah.
With such duration.
Who's counting?
13.
I was in high school when it came out, so...
So, it's not... Yes, we're in that spot right now where, it's not really a game where we're going to go back and play right now, because it's kind of... It's too new, but it's not old enough. But there's going to be a point where... It'll be old enough that, you know what, I want to fire that up to kind of see what it's like. And when Army of Two gets shelved for 5 years and then they revive the franchise, like, I wanted to go see what that was all about. And
you
then you're kind of screwed, right?
Well, I think that there's a bit of a counter-argument here. When you think about, like, the, I guess, you know, nowadays it's the emulation scene. It's like, they're emulating all these old systems you can't get anymore. You play games on it. Your games have an infinite shelf life at that point because cartridges die and whatnot. And a lot of people, like, who's to say that if you install, so say Maxis and EA go away and you want to play this version of SimCity, who's to say that someone won't come up with a community patch that brings some kind of server functionality and runs private servers?
Oh, it could. It could, but... Do you really see EA being consumer-centric or any of these bigger companies?
Of course not.
Companies
I'm,
being talk, consumer
I'm talking
centric
the, for the it? Hypothetical everything goes away, including EA.
Yeah.
But you never know.
Because, we've seen that before. And, even things like people run WoW servers.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know how they got access to that stuff, right? It wasn't anything Blizzard released, so somebody figured out something there.
Do we see a community? Do we see a community server sooner than later? Because it seems like people are.
It's one way to mitigate. It's one way to mitigate like these kind of disasters. Yeah, sure. It's nice to have the official servers and everybody has that, but when you have the community run ones, it helps spread the load, and people like doing that.
How Ultima Online 1 is still around because they let people run community servers for it.
Yeah,
and what's kind of coming to mind for me is that Dark Souls patch that was out in a week, and the guy's like, "Yeah, this is crap. Let's fix this." So they fixed it. So I'm like, I think SimCity is a big enough property that someone might come and do that. And who knows if EA is going to shut it down or not, but that'd be kind of sweet. Just be like, I'm playing over here. It's all good. We can get on whenever we want. But
that's been the interesting thing to kind of see, because I remember, playing through the 90s and 2000s and in colleges that you have all these community run servers. I mean, that was what a lot of these companies just sort of like they sponsored their own, but they also just said, hey, community, you like our game? Go ahead and put up a server. You're responsible if someone goes in there and they start modding, cheating, whatever the case may be. You're responsible for it. Like, you're the person who's maintaining that. That's been an interesting thing to see go away with all these things has been that sort of... because of piracy and a whole lot of other reasons that I understand from their perspective. But is that removal of that kind of trust of the community and that sort of, you know, relationship back and forth.
Right. Yeah, because in the late 90s and early 2000s, I can't think of a single popular shooter that I played that didn't also come with the dedicated server client.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you go back to, like Half-Life and, you know, when Steam first launched and all those games were on it, and all they had were, so you'd have the games, but then you'd flip over to the tools tab, and I can even look right now at the tool tab in my game, and it's nothing but freaking dedicated server, dedicated server, dedicated server, dedicated server, but it's like the source games are on it, and then the newest game I see on here is Natural Selection 2.
Right.
Okay. You know, that's
to source.
It's a source game. And the thing, like, you buy Black Ops 2, you're sure as shit not getting a dedicated server client with that game. It's
I don't know if there's community run stuff for that or not. I think they stopped at one point. I think maybe Modern Warfare had it, and then they stopped including it. They stopped doing it.
Yeah,
it's in tech stuff. So
there's Modern Warfare 3 had a dedicated server, and
and this one doesn't.
Yeah,
I remember there was a stink about them not doing it.
Yeah.
So I mean, but the thing is, a lot of those too, they're built on peer to peer stuff, right?
Yeah,
like. The servers for these games, like Army of Two, it's a peer-to-peer game. The servers are just for matchmaking the people together. So, like, that concept on a console is foreign, but on a PC, it's like, what's your IP, dude?
Let's hop up, yeah. That's funny you say that, because we had to... I played A Valley with Wind 2 with John, and it was, like, totally old school, because they don't have any servers. You have to make your own server. And it's like, okay, connect to my IP, let's go. And then, like three of us hopped into his server. But they give you the option, or your only option is to say, yes, I'm going to make my own server right now. So, I mean, it's old school and it's kind of archaic, but I mean, it works, right? So,
yeah. All right, well, that's networking in the year 2013.
Games. I could editorialize.
I'm going to go reset my modem and firewall. Hold on.
Yeah.
I could editorialize and say that people who expect a game like this to launch smoothly with the always online DRM are foolish. And that's kind of a shitty opinion to take because it shouldn't be that way. But most games that have that online requirement are.
I mean, like, even games that go and do a broad public beta testing cannot still account for the kind of behavior and the kind of traffic that they're necessarily going to see from once the whole thing goes public and goes out wide. I mean, that's a large, that's some of what they said too. They're just like, you know, the contact from Axis, just like, we were surprised. People did things that we never expected to see.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, like, you can't account for
they
everything.
They tried to play this game.
And we could not have foreseen that happening. Who would have thought someone would play... Oh, man, we were blown away. None of our beta tasters played this game.
I want to be a beta taster.
Well, the funny thing is, they had the big beta test, right? Like, a week before release. And they were like, we're going to stress test our servers. We'll send out a key tomorrow. It's only from 7 p.m. until midnight. Well, the key came at, like, 7 p.m. It took 4 hours to download it. And by that time, it was over.
But there was an hour time limit on the demo or the betas.
Well, not for that. Oh. Not for that beta.
Yeah,
you
could play indefinitely.
That was the full game and stuff. But anyway, let's wrap things up. What do we got? we got some iOS apps. We got Windows Phone 7. We got Android. We still got some shirts at Split Reason. We've got. What else we got? We got some feedback on iTunes. Leave it. We like it. Twitter, we are Co-Optimus. Facebook, hey, good news today. I finally merged our Facebook app, which just manages like logins and likes and stuff, with our Facebook page.
Ooh.
And it, and it looks like it actually combined the likes of the two, because our Facebook app actually had like 150 or 200 likes, and our page has like had like 5,200 or something.
Wow.
And now I think we're, yeah, so now we're at, where are we at, 5,414.
There you go. So,
our numbers,
that's
go
pretty
like
cool,
this.
I guess. Yep. But yeah, we have a voicemail. Shit, I lost the thing. There it is. Voicemail number 646-926-6748. Why don't you people leave voicemails?
Call now for
to us?
Lock's special.
Seriously.
Nintendo Entertainment.
What are you doing?
I got some tips, man.
You're sitting there. You're sitting there waiting to get into SimCity. Just pick
call.
Up the phone and just vent, man. Just let it all out. Tell us.
I honestly want one of those old school radio shows where people are like, I just called in to say that, you know, the price on bananas is too high, and I think that the servers on Sims. Yeah, I really like that. Let's do that more.
Is that person calling from
I just
want to
let you know that Blur is not listed on your website, and if you have four players at the same time, ooh, I love crap.
Alright, and fries and a milkshake.
Let's get some of those going. Because look how happy it makes us.
All right. It's
full of mirth.
I'll tell you what. If someone does that for the next show, I'll send him something. I don't know what. We'll find something cool.
Aliens,
and we'll send
Colonial
it to
Marines.
Him. No. Something good.
I know what. I know what we'll send them.
We'll send them a copy of Dark Souls.
I will send them this fancy red Spartan warrior.
Nice.
Yes.
Like that, he's sort of to bribery.
Only slightly licked. Only slightly.
It's been beta tasted. So.
His cat didn't rub his butt on it too much, so it's okay.
No, it's actually out of reach of the cat somehow.
Okay.
See what you did there? Out of
all
reach.
Alright, so let's wrap this up.
Wrap it up, Nick.
Ooh,
otherwise,
I see what you did there. Co-op the Cast, episode 103. Yeah, whatever. What's the day? March 11th. Have a good one.